Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chin Lin.
And Flibberty Gibbet. No, my name's Isaac. That's me.
I'm going to call you Flibberty Gibbet from now on.
Go for it.
Flibberty Gibbet.
Except it's Flibberty Gibbet.
Flibberty Gibbet. That's a mouthful.
Yep.
Okay. So, we're here to talk about season 3 of the animated Netflix series Castlevania, created by Warren Ellis. Season 3 premiered on Netflix 2 months ago on March 5th, 2020. And if you're wondering why we're suddenly talking about season 3 of a show, this is the first time we have done an episode to follow up on a show we have talked about in the past. So we covered Castlevania, I believe, last October 2019. So if you're listening to this and you're like, wait, I haven't watched Castlevania yet, let me go back and listen to those spoiler-free preview episodes, wink, wink. You should go do that because we're talking about season 3 here.
Oh my god, shameless plug munch. Okay, also, of course, since we're discussing season 3, there will be spoilers. We're just gonna, I'm saying that up front. Spoilers.
Yes.
Lots of them.
Yes, and like it kind of piles on, so like spoilers from seasons 1, 2, and 3, because the storylines will kind of converge together. Or not converge, they're connected. You know what I mean. They know what I mean, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's get into season 3. So I think we'll just talk about what we liked, and then we'll talk about what we didn't like.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
So would you like to start?
Okay, so do we want to do a little bit of a recap, kind of, like, what's going on?
I mean, sure, for the listeners who are like, fuck it, I haven't watched season 3.
Well, no, they're probably just like, oh, I've watched season 3, I'll listen to this thing now. But they may not remember exactly what was happening. So, at the beginning of season 3 is what was happening at the end of season 2. Belnades and Belmont are off on their adventures.
You mean Belmont and Belnades.
Yeah, I'm not going to give Belmont that. Alucard's, you know, just hanging out at the castle and the ruined Belmont estate. Isaac is in Africa and is building his own night creature army. And Hector has been captured by Carmilla.
So everyone is spread out and they all have their different storylines in season 3. So it's kind of all over the place, but it all, they're all very good storylines.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, you shouldn't say they come together because they don't.
They don't, but like.
But they're good.
They're good. Yeah.
Is there anyone you want to talk about first?
Let's do Isaac first, because I feel like he's the most isolated.
Yeah, he's definitely got the most, like, the story could have been told this season or last season or next season, and it really wouldn't matter. He doesn't really interact with any other characters.
Oh, well, I mean, his story started last season, so he couldn't have done this journey last season.
Well, they could have if they wanted to, like, after Dracula dies, and you know, you get that scene where he starts creating his army of the night.
That was literally season 2 finale.
Yeah, and they could have made a few more episodes doing just this thing around Isaac if they wanted to. Like, it would have been cool. It doesn't matter. Point is, he has the most separate storyline.
It's very philosophical too.
So what did you think about his storyline?
I enjoyed that he was still hellbent on creating his army of night creatures, but he didn't necessarily want to kill every human being that he came across, right? When he first spoke with the shop owner who gave him that portable mirror, like the shop person was like, oh, well, I'm giving you this mirror for free because I can see that you're a forge master, and if I do you this favor, I know you'll have the courtesy to do me a favor when I'm dead and I'm in hell. So that makes Isaac think, oh, okay, well, not all humans are bad.
Right, but then immediately after, he's attacked by the city guards and ends up, you know, killing everyone.
But he didn't kill the captain and his crew because he knows that there are still good people, like the captain and the shop owner.
Well, the captain, I think, convinced him that he was more useful alive. Not necessarily that he was a good person. At least that's how he got passage on the ship. I actually liked the conversation between Isaac and the captain. I think it's pointing to the direction that they're probably going to take Isaac. Like, right now, he is still kind of, he wants to exact his revenge on Hector for betraying, Hector and Carmilla for betraying Dracula. But the captain is like, you have all this knowledge, you could teach people and teach people to make this a better place. And the real argument, I think, or the real thrust behind his argument is, even if you get rid of all the people, there's still going to be awfulness in the world. It's not going to go away just because people aren't there anymore, or humans aren't there anymore, because vampires and other things will exist. So eliminating humans isn't going to achieve the thing that you want. And I think one of the things he said was that I thought was interesting, but didn't really apply to Isaac, or wouldn't really, I guess, appeal to Isaac, is that he's like, if you make yourself part of another man's story, you never have your own story.
Oh, that was an excellent quote. I'm glad you remembered that.
So Isaac doesn't really care about being famous, it doesn't seem. He doesn't care about the glory or having his own story. But I think that's a kind of a good way to think about it. Like, if you live for exacting revenge for Dracula, like, you don't get to do your own thing. You don't get to fulfill your own purpose in life.
Also, Dracula had a lot of enemies, so your job would be endless. It'd be task after task.
Yeah. And so that's, thinking about that, I think about, like, and this ties in a little more to Hector, like, Dracula had convinced all these people to do his bidding. And you know, season two was really focused on, like, the whole Wallachia area, whereas season three has really spread out across Europe, you know. Well, not across the Mediterranean, I should say, because you've got Isaac starting out in Tunisia and, of course, Hector and Carmilla up in Austria, and Belnat is in Belmont, and Alucard, theoretically, all still in Wallachia, so they've spread the story out a little bit more. It seems so strange to me that Dracula was conducting this war against all of humanity, and it seemed to be going badly just in Wallachia. Like, how did he think he would take over the world if he couldn't manage to take over this one country?
I mean, Dracula wasn't planning to take over the world. He just wanted to end human existence.
Right. But think about that. That means essentially taking over the world. That means going everywhere and killing all humans across the planet.
Well, he wasn't planning to take over necessarily. He was just going to, you know, wither away and die in depression.
Right. I don't know. It seems like
his plan wasn't well thought out.
It wasn't.
That was exactly the point that Carmilla was making last season.
And I think that was someone else's, I forget who said it, but they were like, this is really just a really long suicide note. I forget who said that, but I think that's really, like, why that war was conducted so poorly, and why the story was constrained to Wallachia, and perhaps the creators of the show didn't expect to necessarily expand the setting further than just that part of what is now currently Romania. But
they probably, I don't know for sure, maybe they didn't realize they would have a season three.
It's very possible, because it felt very like the story is kind of done. It felt like the last episode of season two felt to me like the last episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. Like, it's great for closure, but you understand there's still some adventures to be had, but you're not necessarily going to get to see them because life moves on.
Hey, that's a good analogy. That's a good comparison. I like that. Because with Isaac, in that season two finale, his story didn't have to be like that. He could have just rotted in the desert for all we knew as the viewer.
Right.
But because season three was greenlit, they took a new direction with him.
Right. I mean, So they could have taken his story anywhere, because at the end of season two, he had created, a small squad of night creatures that he could have used to defend himself or take over a town or whatever.
Oh, yes, I know. I'm saying after he was thrown through the transfiguration mirror by Dracula, I'm saying him in the desert, that image of him, that his story there, it could have just ended there if season two was going to be the last season.
Right.
But I'm saying they went with a new direction with Isaac, and I'm glad they did that, because the writers did an excellent job executing that in season three, him meeting all these different people and taking little nuggets of wisdom.
So I liked...
Do you think he had character development by the end of season three?
Maybe a tiny bit.
A tiny bit, yeah.
Yeah, because he first, when he interacts with the shopkeeper, he's like, oh, well, okay, there are some good humans. And then he's like, oh, all humans are shit again when he gets attacked. Then he goes on gets on the ship and talks with the captain and goes, maybe there are some good humans. And he gets to Genoa and they attack him and he's like, oh, all humans are shit again. So it's...
I mean, we feel that way every day in our lives, right?
So I'm hoping that he eventually learns the lesson that the captain tried to teach him, which is like, yes, some humans are shit, but some humans are also good. And even an individual human is sometimes good and sometimes shit. So, like, if you eliminate all the bad, you also eliminate all the good. So...
Oh, that reminds me of something in Charmed in season 7, but I'm not gonna mention it because you hate Charmed.
Yes, good.
But if there's any Charmed fans listening, I think y'all know what subplot I'm talking about in season 7.
Man, they'd have to be super fans, because that is very vague. Anyway.
Yes, I am addressing super fans, Isaac. One more question about Isaac the character. What do you think he's going to do in season 4? Do you think he's actually going to make a conscious effort to be better?
No.
Yeah, I thought so.
No, I think so. Right now, he ran across that woman that pointed him toward that guy, that magician that was building a city with slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And he freed the slaves to make them slaves of his own. He went and defeated the magician and then killed the people and turned them into night creatures. And he's essentially got an army at this point that he can now, march across northern Italy and Austria and southern Austria to Styria and
attack Carmilla
and Hector.
Yeah. Do you think season 4 will be the last season?
I don't know.
Okay, because I was thinking maybe Isaac doesn't necessarily progress as a character, but maybe by the end of season four, he'll learn his lesson and then die. It sounds like he's the kind of tragic character whose ending would be that way.
See, I'm thinking it might go a little differently. Like, I think that his exploits in season four will convince him to try and better humanity and maybe even to kind of switch his allegiance and try to get rid of vampires. And I think that city that he left, he will return to and try and rule benevolently.
Oh, okay. So you're feeling hopeful.
I think that's where they're going to take him. I think...
like I said, you're feeling hopeful.
for the end of his character arc, yes.
Okay.
Now, it would not also surprise me that upon return to that city and trying to set up something to benefit all humans, that he, you know, ultimately loses his life. But I think that's kind of the arc that we're going to see with Isaac.
I like it. This is a good segue to talk about Hector.
Yeah, because Hector's story is also kind of, you know, off by himself-ish.
Well, so he's stuck with Carmilla. They journeyed from Brayla to Styria. And when we looked it up on the map, it was a really far distance for Hector to walk because he was in chains.
Right. And they said it was 800 miles on the show several times. They're like 800 mile corridor.
Yeah, but I need a visualization for that stuff.
Yeah.
Briefly touching on Carmilla before we go more into Hector. I really liked that. In season three, we learn that Carmilla isn't ruling Styria by herself. She actually has three other vampire sisters. So
I'm still curious about this, though. And they didn't really address it this season or last season. All their vampire soldiers, like, there are tons of them.
Uh-huh.
How do they get fed? Because, like, it seems like it's a lot to feed, you know, the four vampires in that castle that are ruling it. But there are dozens, if not hundreds, of vampire soldiers that they use as an army. So where do they get all the food, like, to feed these vampires?
Well, their army right now is depleted, so you'll just have to suspend disbelief.
I guess. But, I mean, they had the army to begin with because they took it to Brayla. And that's, you know, where they clashed with the warrior, the other nameless, faceless vampire soldiers on Dracula's side. I'm just curious where all these vampire soldiers are coming from and why they don't all share the same sort of power-hungry malevolence that the main characters do.
I don't know.
Maybe we'll learn. Maybe someone will listen to this episode and go, oh, well, they're not actually vampires. They're, you know, vampire hybrids, and they're all wearing slave crowns or something. And I would totally buy that. I'd be like, okay, cool. That makes sense. Got it.
Okay, well, that's not what I was going to talk about.
Yeah, I know. Go ahead. What were you going to talk about?
I like that Carmilla has, she's ruling with three vampire sisters, and... Carmilla's plan is to have Hector forge new soldiers.
New night creatures.
New night creatures to be their soldiers. And then they can conquer the surrounding areas around Styria.
Well, they weren't going specifically for around Styria. They were looking to do essentially just the trek that Carmilla had just done. Just that 800-mile... like, long piece of land that is all in disarray between Styria and Brayla.
Okay, well, don't have to get all technical on me, do you? Yeah. My point that I'm trying to make is that I think it's really cool that if they're successful, they're there's the idea that there's going to be an empire run by four women, and that's very progressive for the time of the series.
Yes, yes, that's true. Having women rulers is not standard for the time.
That was what I was going to say about it.
I see.
Because we're talking about things we like right now.
Right, okay. Well, oh, I guess we are talking about things we like. I was just talking about kind of people. And so we were essentially with Carmilla and Hector. And for that, I guess, all right. So I won't talk about things I didn't like about that
not situation. Not yet.
Right. So what I did like was that they made these new vampires that we were introduced to kind of balanced, right? Each one has a kind of specialty, and
oh yeah, the four of them.
Yeah,
you can't have one without the other because they all need each other. They all contribute something to the table,
right?
And that brings me to so there's Astriga, there's Morana, and then there's Lenore. Lenore is the one who is tasked to work on Hector to get him on their side.
You know, if we're talking about things we like, I like Lenore.
I think she's very practical, which makes sense because she's quote-unquote the diplomat of them four.
Well, and
so you have to give a little, take a little, give a little.
She was quite devious, and I really liked that. Because as so often happens in these kind of shows, which happens more in animes about tactics, like the diplomats or whatever seem to always just be like kind of dumb and not very good at being diplomats. And in this case, like, she plays Hector very well. And
like a violin.
Like, as a viewer, I'm like, no, Hector, don't be stupid. Come on, be smart about this. But the way that she plays him is incredibly good. Now, because I've read so many lit RPGs where your words have a lot more meaning than they do, like, here on Earth, that words can be binding. As soon as she was like, I want to hear you say it, I was like, no, don't ever say, like, I pledge my loyalty to you, because, like, you live in a world with magic, and that can be fucking binding, and you will be stuck.
Okay, so let's take a moment, since we're on this plot, to say what we didn't like. And you and I both agree that what we didn't like was that Hector was being a naive dumbass again.
Yeah, it's like he didn't learn his lesson.
He didn't learn his lesson from season two. He didn't learn anything in season three.
Like he...
There's no development for him, and it's actually quite sad. He's literally just a pet.
Yeah, so...
He's just a pawn in this game.
Yeah, so he went from being someone that was theoretically smart enough to be one of Dracula's generals to, and maybe he wasn't smart enough. Maybe he only had the job because he was a forge master. But so he gets deceived by Carmilla in season two, and he realized, like, the rest of his life is going to be like shit as a slave for Carmilla, and. Like, he doesn't seem to realize, like, he, as soon as Lenore says, oh, I'm the diplomat, like, he does seem to have this idea of, oh, she's going to try and trick me, so I can't trust anything. And then once she proves that she has way more power than he has, like, he can't hurt her because she's just so much more powerful, he kind of, like, gives up and is like, ah, I guess she's all right. I'll trust things she says, and I'm like, no, what are you doing? Like, you don't need to try and kill her, but you definitely need to think, like, oh, she does not have my best interests at heart. That being said, I am a sucker for a pretty face, and in such a situation, I think I might probably also react in the same manner.
Brown Chica Brown Cow.
Oh yeah, that reminds me of one of the things that I liked was the nudity. Now, so in season three, they say they give you the TV rating for each one. It's like TV, MA, you know, gore, and then nudity.
Language, nudity.
And for the first like 7 or 8 episodes, it said nudity. I'm like, every time they say there's nudity, I haven't seen shit. There's been boobs, but their nipples have been covered up. No, this is garbage. There's no nudity. And then I was rewarded, and there was nudity. But it was so interspersed in between, like, very gory things that, you know, there's no time to enjoy the nudity. It's like, well, nudity and disembowelment, and then more nudity, and then more disembowelment.
Well, what'd you expect? Like, this is not that kind of series.
No. I think it probably works better because, like,
it's to remind you that this is not supposed to be enjoyable.
Yeah, and the whole thing, like, that particular episode I really liked because it was a lot of cutting back and forth between what seemed to be the climaxes of a lot of stories. I think that was episode 9. I will say, I guess, one of the things that, I don't want to say I didn't like it, but one of the things that some viewers might find difficult is that the plot seems to take 7 episodes to set up. And then, you know, the last 2 or 3 episodes to, like, you know, work out.
So you're saying season 3 was a little slow to start off and then things pick up more in the second half?
Some people might think that. Not even the second half. It's like the last, like, from episode 8, 9, and 10, like, is where it picks up. For the most part, like, it's fairly slow going, I feel. But I didn't hate that. I never thought, oh, where's this going? This is taking too long to set up.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say, I never felt that way watching the show. But granted, we only watched it once through.
And we really did binge it. I feel like they did a really good job of setting up the ends of episodes to make you want to watch another episode.
Oh yeah, Castlevania is great with their cliffhangers and their suspense. Was that all we wanted to say about Hector and Carmilla before we move on?
You mentioned that you liked the castle there and you thought it was pretty, and I...
Yeah, I thought it was very beautiful, and I thought the sisters took it from someone because it kind of made sense in my mind. Okay, well, maybe they needed a castle and they just took it from some people.
See, and I think they built it, but in any case, I think my real curiosity, and this is like way deep in the weeds, but... The floor, one of the floors in the courtyard seemed to be like solid marble, like all the way across. Not like a bunch of pieces, but like a huge slab of marble that was, I don't know, 100 yards by 100 yards or something. Like, it was huge. And I wondered, you know, how they possibly were able to do that. And now that I think about it, maybe it was magic, but still. It was cool, but I'm curious how they got it. And maybe the creators didn't think about that at all. They were just like, yeah, it's shiny marble floor.
Maybe the floor was marble because it goes with the color scheme of the entire castle. It's like that ivory beige, like, sleek kind of design.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
Okay. That's all I got for, I mean, oh. So, the end of that plot line is... You know, Lenore getting that loyal slave ring on Hector, right? And then having other slave rings given to the other vampires. Do you think that she might find a way to subjugate the other 3 vampires with those same rings?
I don't think that's the purpose of the ring. The ring that she gave to the other sisters... I don't think she's trying to use that to control her sisters.
I think she might. I think she might go back to that.
So you think she's trying to knock off Carmilla so that she can be in charge?
Yeah.
Not kill Carmilla. I mean, right. Like, she wants to be the alpha because right now she's more of the beta.
Right. So I think that she might go back to that vampire magician and ask for essentially one ring to rule them all.
Oh, I see what you did there. I like it. I was thinking that's where you were headed with that.
Yeah.
I did like the idea of the ring. I was thinking more maybe season four. It's possible Carmilla is jealous because Lenore was such a genius coming up with this plan to bind Hector to her and thus to them.
Right.
Maybe Carmilla gets jealous in season four and she's like, well, I don't want Carmilla to... I don't want Lenore to be alpha anymore.
So here's the other thing that could happen with those rings, right? Let's say they're all co-equal except for Hector, right? He's the one that's enslaved.
Uh-huh.
But because he's loyal to Lenore, the night creatures are loyal to anyone else wearing the ring, I guess. What if they fight each other?
Oh, you think they're all
going to
fight each other?
Yeah.
Well, it defeats the whole purpose of their sisterhood, but it would make an interesting storyline to unfold.
I think that if anyone were to... So, I think that Carmilla would certainly... I think her character is the type that would turn on the others.
Oh, yeah, for sure. She's very cunning.
And I think Lenore might do the same, obviously, because I think that she might do a one-ring situation. But the other two, I think that they actually recognize the value of teamwork. Whereas I feel like Carmilla thinks that if the others weren't around, she would probably be just fine anyway. And I think Lenore thinks that the other three are dumber than her, and so that she will probably want to take over.
I like that. I like that.
Okay, that's all I've got for that plot line.
No, I like your predictions.
Okay, good.
Okay, so do we want to go with Belnades and Belmont first and then Alucard?
No, let's do Alucard first.
Okay, because the stuff with Alucard, like, I like some of it and then it ends badly. So I'm going to, like...
See, I predicted it ending badly to start.
Okay, well... I mean, there was that one moment where the two characters, like, had a glance. But, okay, so Alucard is all by himself, and he comes across... Or actually, no. These two other people sought him out. So they were around his property. And he, of course, having vampire senses, finds them and almost attacks them, but he hears them out. So we're introduced to two new characters, Sumi and Taka, voiced by Rila Fukushima and Toru Uchikado. Alucard's story is more of a subplot, like it really doesn't have anything to do with the other stories. Basically, Sumi and Taka were slaves from Cho's court. Cho was one of the vampires who Dracula summoned in season two, and obviously Cho is now dead. But Sumi and Taka told Alucard, "Hey, we need to learn new skills and knowledge so that if another vampire takes over Cho's court, that we can actually stand up to them."
So
that's what they told him,
right? And at first, right,
it starts out nice. I liked the idea of Alucard having a purpose again, because he was all by himself in that lonely, dreary, depressing castle where he killed his own father.
So before they said they were from Japan, I was like, oh, cool, we're gonna have like a new, he's gonna start a new academy for training people to fight monsters or something. He's gonna pick up the Belmont...
Legacy.
Mission. Yeah, legacy.
Yeah.
But once they said they were from Japan, I'm like, I don't see how you got there fast enough or that quickly. Because, like, to go from Japan to Romania, it's been like a year and 2 months since Cho was summoned. Like, I don't see how they got there that fast. So, and this is probably not what the... what the creators of the show had in mind, but that put the seed of suspicion in my head. I'm like, I don't think that... I honestly didn't think they were who they said they were. And I figured that they were doing something duplicitous. The next thing that like kind of tipped me off was when...
They kept asking about like the other magical stuff that Alucard wasn't showing them.
Well, yeah. So when they asked a second time about what made the castle move, I was like, oh, they are here for a specific purpose. They want to know what makes the castle move. And he doesn't take the time to explain, like, oh, it got broken by magic. It's totally fucked. It's never going to move again. And when they were in the forest sparring, and Sumi jumps on Alucard's back and's like, "Make us lunch, vampire slave." That to me did not seem playful. That to me was foreshadowing. I'm like, I think that they are going to try and use him or destroy him. As soon as she said that.
Well, like I said, you have a good intuition about these things that I don't have.
Okay.
I genuinely thought they were being playful. Because, I don't know, I want to be hopeful that Alucard actually has a good story this time. Because his story, since day one, has been depressing as fuck.
Well, so he was... I don't know. I felt like the beginning of the season for him started out kind of happy. Yeah, he had just killed his dad, and that's not, like, fun, but he was living a peaceful life, and
while... He got to have human interaction again.
While he was going a little crazy on his own, like, his life was okay. So I figured this, the conflict that the creators were going to introduce was that these two new people were going to try and use him in some way, and he was going to have to, I don't know, break away from them or something. What ends up happening, of course you remember, is that they have, sexy time.
Brown chicka brown cow.
And then they restrain, the two... restrain Alucard and attempt to kill him, but he uses his magic sword that he can control with his mind to kill them instead.
Yeah, that was dumb. Like, you've been learning skills and magic from this vampire, and you forgot that he had the power of telekinesis?
Well, so he kind of explained it. He said, "I told you my father didn't like magical weapons, but that doesn't mean I don't use them."
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at how they were sparring, whenever he was using his sword, he was using it like it was a regular sword.
Unlike, oh, yeah, he just held it.
Yeah. Unlike in season two, where he was like, oh, let me use my telekinesis powers to, like, magic my sword all over the place and kill everyone.
Telekinesis.
I know. Telekinesis is a joke from C-Lab 2020.
Okay, so in another Adult Swim series?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he didn't show them, so they're kind of right in that he was withholding information from them.
But he wasn't trying to be misleading.
Right.
He was just getting to know them.
I was like, he was being, justifiably cautious.
Yeah.
And
he thought they were going to stick around for a long time. So it's not like they're getting a crash course,
right,
on skills and magic. Like, he was going to spread it all out so he can enjoy their company and also give them what they want.
Right. So that was, I mean, that's really the point, right? Like,
yeah.
He's like, I mean, maybe I was holding back, but I was really, like, I had no intention of holding everything back. I was just going to teach you at the pace that is appropriate. So, in the end, they're pointing him back towards becoming Dracula on his own.
They, the writers.
Yeah, the creators, yeah.
Yeah. because he impales their corpses.
Yep, just like Vlad the Impaler, Vlad Dracula Tepish.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, harkens back to the first episode of season one. When Alucard's mother is walking up to the castle and there are hundreds of people impaled. Now,
it's a good parallel.
Yeah. Now, the difference is that those people were presumably killed the way that Vlad the Impaler had done it, which was they were skewered through their anus while they were alive, and it took days for them to die, whereas these two were killed first, and then he just, you know, put them on the spikes.
Well, the image is what's parallel, yeah. not how they were killed.
Right.
So I have something I don't like about this, and I'm going to go on a little mini rant. I didn't like how this story ended with Sumi and Taka, because it honestly felt like they were here to be students so that Alucard can have a new purpose and continue the Belmont legacy. Because Trevor's the last Belmont, right? Like, he could die next season. He is the last Belmont.
Yes, that's true.
So it would be nice.
But he's having sex with, what's her name, a lot. So there could be another Belmont.
Okay. Sifa has...
Sifa, yeah.
Sifa. Damn, why do I do that? Sifa has magic, so I imagine she's using magical protection so that she doesn't get pregnant.
I don't think so. I think... So they've only been banging... So the plot line is that they've only been off in the field for about 2 months. So... Yeah, I mean, she may just now be getting pregnant.
Well, anyways.
But yes, make your point.
Okay, so Sumi and Taka are two characters from Japan, and they're seeking advice and knowledge from Alucard. If the characters are just going to kill them off at the very end, like, it doesn't... They didn't have to be Asian.
Okay.
Because if the purpose of their character was just to make Alucard more darker in personality, it doesn't... There's no purpose in them having to be from Japan. They could have been from any other country in the world. It didn't have to be Cho, the vampire, that they're referring to. Because... The fact that the characters chose Sumi and Taka to be from Japan, bringing in that Asian culture into the show, it just rubs off the wrong way for Asian American viewers watching this. They didn't have to be Asian. There was no purpose to them being Asian story-wise. They just happened to be from Japan because the creators chose that path.
So let me ask you this. They wanted to relate it back to one of the vampires that was in
Dracula's court.
Right.
Yeah.
So who else would you have picked?
I don't know. Someone who wasn't Asian. Well, because this is Eastern Europe, so I wouldn't expect an Asian character to come up in the show anyways. But they brought them in and had their story, their subplot end this way with Alucard, and it just rubs off the wrong way.
Okay.
Because I remember the first time I explained it to you that you were like, I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the creators were going, we need some duplicitous characters. Where do they need to be from? Oh, Asia, that'll be it.
I'm not saying I dislike the show. I'm just saying here's this one thing about season three I did not enjoy. But overall, I still enjoy the season and I still like the show a lot.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. But I think it's important to point that out if no one paid attention to that before.
Yeah, I would be curious as to how many people had that line of thinking. They were like, oh, they made the Asians duplicitous. How racist of them. Or whether most people were just like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Because I think that's really where the creators were trying to come from, like, was to give you a plot twist, not to demonize a particular race.
Oh, I'm not saying they were trying to demonize. I'm just saying making this decision to make these two characters Asian comes off the wrong way, given how their story ended.
Okay.
Moving on to Belnades and Belmont.
Yes.
So the thing I liked with their story, and their story is like the plot A. It takes up most of the time in season three. I like that they're dealing with a group of monks in this small village, and the monks... So my original thinking is that the monks were just brainwashed by the night creature that attacked their priory. And I liked the idea that Dracula's night creatures can have their own agendas. They're not just followers. Because in seasons one and two, that's what I thought. Okay, these are just mindless night creatures, like, just trying to eat humans and kill humans and do whatever they were told.
Right, okay. And so you like that they showed some intelligence this time?
I like that they showed intelligence. I liked that they had an agenda in mind. And I liked that...
So actually, I think that's, thinking back on it, there was a night creature that had some intelligence in season one.
Oh yeah, that one that ate the bishop.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really in season two that they were a little more mindless. And that may have been because of the Forge Masters. Like... They were under the control of the Forge Masters, which they're no longer for some reason, which is, you know, now that I think about it, a little strange, right? Because
Isaac's not around to follow his orders. Hector's not around to follow his orders. So they kind of have to do their own thing.
But wouldn't they just return to their masters after succeeding or failing at whatever the last directive was?
But if they have intelligence in this season, they're not going to return to their masters.
Yeah, but my question is, why would they suddenly gain the intelligence?
Oh.
Like, shouldn't they have done whatever their master ordered them, and then, upon success or failure, gone back to their master for more direction? Like, I feel like, now that I think about it, Hector's 800-mile trek to Styria... should have been visited by a lot of night creatures going, "Hey, boss, what do you want me to do now?" Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just not the nature of the show.
Yeah.
Every time you poke holes like this, I'm just like, that's just not that's not how the universe was built.
Well, so but it is how it was built. So my question is... What I really want is for them to come back and be like, oh yeah, here's why that happened. And maybe I'm missing something.
So why did this night creature attack this group of monks and brainwash them?
Yes. Yes. So what suddenly gave him agency? I totally get, like, him having his own agency and being like, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to try and open a portal to hell so I can get Dracula back. But I want to know why he was able to do that. Like, because Hector was captured, or because Isaac was thrown to North Africa, like, what is it that broke that chain that he can, you know, move on and do his own thing? Don't get me wrong. I like that he has agency and, you know.
He was so creepy looking. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's funny is, you know, when you first see him, I thought he had like mushrooms growing on him and shit. And they were just, you know, weirdly colored mushrooms.
I thought he just had like translucent, like, polka dots on his skin.
But then Saint Germain has this stone, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, that's the stuff on that creature. they're one and the same. They know how to, like, that creature knows how to find where that portal is.
Mm-hmm. I liked that Saint Germain was able to kind of control the night creature for a little bit to get him to show in the infinite portal, or corridor, I mean, like, where exactly his the person that he's looking for, where they are.
Yeah.
Like, we still don't know, we never know if Saint Germain is looking for, like, his wife, his daughter, his son, a friend, whatever.
I think, love, long lost love, like, wife, essentially, but
okay, so
traveling companion. This whole thing was very Doctor Who-esque to me.
Ooh, speak more, please.
So it felt like a lot of the stuff that we were seeing through the Infinite Corridor wasn't necessarily a different iteration of Earth, but just Earth at a different time period, which happens a lot in Doctor Who. So like I feel like where he found his, I'm gonna say wife. I feel like where he found her was just far, far in the future, which is why she's standing upside down and there's gears everywhere. I want to know more about that plot line, which I don't know that we're going to get because of how this ended.
Yeah, I don't think we'll go back to that because we as the viewer get closure that he has reunited with his wife / companion.
But,
and then the infinite corridor has closed.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be reopened.
But, like, I want to know, like, why? Because he saw her once before, it seems like. That's what his nightmare was. That he found her once, and she wouldn't take his hand. And I don't understand why she wouldn't. Is it because where she's at now is a utopia, and she doesn't want to go back to the freaking Middle Ages where everything is terrible? Or was she no longer in love with him? Like, what?
Well, we're not going to see that because the show is called Castlevania.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, Dracula-esque.
Anyway, I hope that they show up again and maybe we get to see some more of that kind of stuff. I don't know.
I don't see it happening, but I understand your curiosity.
Yeah.
Because I think the Infinite Corridor we will see again in season 4, but it's going to be them, the night creatures, still wanting to bring Dracula back.
Right, because we did see Dracula, and Dracula almost came back. Or maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
I don't think he was trying to come back, because he wanted to die. But I think he was just, I think he noticed that the corridor was open and he was like, what?
Okay. Because like he is actually reunited with his wife now.
And so I asked you when we watched this, why is she in hell?
Right. Because I think everyone goes to hell at this point. Like, I think God has abandoned the earth and no one goes to heaven. So if you die, you're going to hell regardless. Because it's impossible to live a sort of sin-free life. Therefore, you're going to hell. And, you know, The Good Place kind of touched on this. As life becomes more complex, it becomes harder to do a thing that is purely good and doesn't have any ill effects on other people or other things. I think that everyone just ends up in hell, and so that's why Dracula finds his wife there. I forget her name.
Lisa.
Ah, yeah, Lisa. But she seemed unconscious.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Like, yeah, I'm not sure they're necessarily spending time together, or whether Dracula just is holding an unconscious form of Lisa. I'm not sure what's going on.
But do you think we'll actually see him again in season 4? I think it's possible. I don't think he wants to come back. Like, his night creatures want to get him back because he's their master, but his will to live is no longer...
I absolutely think he'll come back because he comes back in the games. So there's definitely precedent for it happening, and they have canon in the games to, you know, have different reasons for him to come back. I think that, if the pacing of season three is any indication, that there will be five seasons of the show, and that Dracula coming back will probably be the cliffhanger for season four, for the end of season four. And then Dracula will be corrupted, probably. And they'll either go one of two routes. The whole arc of season five will be to seal away and destroy Dracula again. Or the first half will be to seal away or change Dracula. And Dracula in the second half becomes a good person and maybe takes over the mission that Isaac has learned to try and teach people, which is the same thing that his wife was trying to do, that Lisa was trying to do. So maybe he tries to make a better Earth instead of a shittier Earth in the second half of season five. I don't know. That's just my thoughts.
I like it. I think that's a good point to end our discussion.
Okay.
Yeah. Fingers crossed for a season four and five, but I would be okay if they ended it with just four.
I mean, it seems to be a very popular show, so I don't see them canceling it anytime soon.
Well, so my concern with a lot of shows that I really like is that they get renewed for too long, and then writers don't really know how to take their story further. So that's why a lot of shows that we enjoy, they end on a shitty note, or their last season is complete shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then some shows are better contained with a certain number of seasons.
Star Trek The Next Generation, 7 seasons. They're all so, well, the last 5 are so good. The first 2 are very rough.
Yeah, and because you told me that, I still haven't watched it.
I mean, we can start at season 3, which we did.
I've caught episodes, but they do look very long.
I was like, but even then, season 3, like, they're just starting to get their footing. But yeah, once it gets going, man, that show is amazing. All right.
Okay, we're done. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables Podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin McLeod.